Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Obviously, we were doing well with Cork City and I was playing well and everybody was playing well, so it was great. Yeah. And then some clubs started to come to watch my games and stuff. And so kind of eventually it was either Brighton or Hull. So I went over to see Brighton. It was lovely. But the manager was Sammy Hoopia, and he never called me in and said, oh, this is why we're signing you. I want you to do this, this and this. Just didn't happen. Whereas when I went to Hull, I met Steve Bruce and he was talking to me and saying they really want me to sign and kind of.
So it was that personal connection.
Exactly, yeah. So yeah. That's what kind of made my decision for me.
They were Premier League at the time as well.
Yeah, Premier League. So I started in training with them and I was doing quite well. I think Ireland had like a short Seamus Coleman and a couple other players were injured, so I got called up to the senior team.
What was it like training with the Irish team?
Unbelievable. It was weird, like players like Robbie Keane, Shane Long, Roy Keane obviously being there, Martin O'Neill. Because a few months earlier I was playing against Bray away or whatever, and I was up with the Irish team, so that was a great week.
Does Roy Keane, and you don't have to answer this if you want that, does he treat the Cork fellas better than the rest?
I'd say he does. I think that's in his nature.
Yeah, I think so.
he loves people from Cork.
Yeah.
Especially the north side.
Yeah. He's welcome on the podcast, by the way.
I always looked up to Roy Keane as a player. I was a very, very similar player to him, you know, tough, really, really passionate about the game. You could probably see it in my face, but I just love, he was my favourite, there we go, Ron is this jersey on. Yeah. Well, he was my most favourite player in the Premiership, ever, I'd say. And I just loved watching him, not just because he was from Cork, it's because he really, the fans loved him. He was a tough player. He always done the right thing and he was always there. And he threw a few Fs as well at the other players that were just pussyfooting
that
around.
That one,
you know?
Him and Vieira in the tunnel, that's brilliant. That wouldn't happen today, they'd both be sent off.
I know.
And banned, I'd say.
But you know, when he was at his peak as well, you know, he was playing in the Champions League, a great United team now as well, he was the leader. But playing against the likes of Zidane and Rivaldo, Luis Figo, Ronaldo and Keane, you know, he'd be man of the match.
He'd still stand out.
And he's from Mayfield. And it was like, Jesus Christ. Do you know what I mean? We can all be fucking, it's all there for us too. He's only from, you know, he's from the same city as us, do you know? Mm-hmm.
You'd have to love the other side of him as well, even the commentating at the moment.
Brilliant.
He is straight out there.
He's cultural. That's what people need. Everyone's delighted with him on Sky is because he's so brutally honest.
Yeah.
And no one can question him, because if someone questions him, is it, I've got 7 Premier League titles, I have a Champions League, I have 4 FA Cups, I have this, I have that. Who are you to question me?
Yeah. Whereas sometimes, and I like Richie Sadler on RT, but sometimes he gets trolled online, he gets a bit of hate online because his career was cut short through injuries, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he makes very valid points, but some people throw it in his face, you know. But you know what, Roy Keane, doesn't matter what he says, he's been there, done it. He was in the best team in the world. He was one of the best midfielders in Premier League history. So everything he says with authority because he can, you know?
Exactly.
And it's great then because half the other fellas on Sky Sports are afraid of him.
they are actually. Yeah. Half of them are terrified in case he goes off on one, you know?
But look, we digress a small bit. So you went off to Hull. What was it like? Was it a big step up from League of Ireland?
It was, to be honest. Like, the training was a lot quicker. You know, people who know or play football know what boxes are. So basically you're around in kind of a circle or whatever, and there's two people in the middle and you have to keep the ball away from them. I was terrible. Like, I thought I was good at Cork City, which I was, but went to Hull then, it was just really difficult. But eventually I settled in and went unknown to Blackpool, played two games for them, and got injured for the first time. I injured my knee. So then I came back to Hull and I was out for about a year.
What kind of an injury did you get?
My patella tendon.
Okay. That's behind the kneecap.
Yeah. So then I got back fit from that, started playing a lot of games with the under-23s, and then I made my debut for Hull against Bolton in the Championship. And then 2 days after that, I played in the under-21 Premier League Cup final against West Ham. And I injured my knee in the first half, but I didn't really know what was injured.
Same knee.
So I played all of the game, played extra time and took a penalty, all with my knee in pieces. But I didn't notice.
Adrenaline was keeping
me. Yeah, the next morning I woke up, my knee was about that size. So I went into training. Just after making my debut, things were going to go well. And then bang, this happened. So it was kind of another big thing to deal with.
Do you know, like when you're 20, 21 and you're over in England with Hull, and then you're out for a year, like I'd say it's very frustrating, isolating.
So isolating. Obviously the physios are brilliant and they're well trained, not only to treat you physically but manage you mentally as well.
Yeah.
And lots of people tried with me, but my mental health was fairly bad. Like,
not for the first injury. Yeah. Was it bad for that as well?
No. The first injury was like, look, this is just after happening. It can happen to anyone. I'll get back stronger, which I did. Then it happened again 2 days after making my debut.
And you know what's ahead then again? Like,
it was kind of got back fit from that injury then, and we were relegated to the Championship. So I was like, this is my year. I'm going to play. So I played every single preseason game, and then before I played Aston Villa, the manager dropped me. For what reason, I don't know, but...
Was it Steve Bruce at the time?
No, the Russian manager.
Oh, okay. Check who that manager was, Ron.
Leonid Slutsky.
Oh, yeah, Slutsky. He was at CSK Moscow for years, yeah.
Yeah. He didn't like me, and I didn't particularly like him either. It was kind of after that my mental health kind of deteriorated, and I was contemplating suicide. And
were you on your own over there?
No, Bailey was living with me at this point. So
I'd say it was tough for her too.
Oh, so hard. What I put her through was just criminal, and my family as well.
But you know that wasn't your fault then as well. Like, do you know, like, yeah, I done the same stuff to my own wife and my own family, like my own mental health. You know, we act in ways that we don't understand, you know.
You're not thinking rationally, like, you know?
But yeah, I have a lot more understanding of it now since the help I got since I came back to Cork. I'm in St. Finbar's Hospital and I have a key worker, I have a nurse, doctor, psychiatrist, social worker, all helping me to get where I need to be, because what my GP said to me, I just went into him and I said, I can't understand why I can't be normal. He said to me, he was like, when what happened, there was a fire in your brain. He's like, that fire is out, but the earth is still scorched. I thought that was a really apt way of putting it for
that's
him.
That's a brilliant way.
For me to understand.
Yeah, that's unbelievable way to put it.
Yeah.
But once you've scorched earth, you can get fertile earth all.
Exactly. Right? It'll come in.
Go stronger.
Farmers burn fields to create.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he put it like that to me, and I kind of went, well, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
There's no fire, but there's damage.
And it's not completely destroyed, like?
No,
there's a way back. Do you know when the second knee injury happened? Was the exact same injury?
No, it wasn't. The second injury, I tore my chondral surface, which is like a cartilage. It's really, really delicate. So it, like, tears up, and they just go in and snip it and clean it up. But it doesn't actually regenerate or fix itself.
Mm.
So I still have trouble with my knee now on a daily basis. But I'm not training or playing or anything, so it's not too bad.
Do you know when the second injury happened here? Did you make were you out for a long time again?
9 months this time.
Was that a career ending?
No, neither of them were career ending. They're just career.
They affected your mental
health. Exactly, affected my mental health, affected my progress as a player.
Yeah.
Because when I went there, when I was 19, when I was doing well, I was the good young player. But by the time I got back, there was good young players, 2-3 years younger than me.
Mm.
So I was never really in the picture to play.
So probably your best developmental years you probably missed, you know, in the couple of years where like you were really growing your game, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you know the second injury then? That's when mental health kind of went down.
After that, yeah, it was kind of went down. And then I got back fit and I was playing well, so I was happy.
Mm.
And I thought I was going to play. And then that new manager came in and played me for every preseason game and then just chuck me to the side. So.
And what happened then? Were you stuck in the reserves?
No, I wasn't even playing with the reserves. I was just training every day, but not playing.
Isn't it amazing how a relationship between a player and a manager can actually affect how a team plays? Like,
absolutely.
Like instead of just taking your relationship away from the situation, from managers, and just looking at the player as in he should be playing, he's one of the top, he's one of the 11, and just playing him instead of just, you know, being nasty about it. Yeah. Do you know what, no, I don't like this fella here, or he's going on the bench.
It's true. It just shows as well how important man management is. Yeah, you know, and like,
yeah,
manage your players. Like a good few players that was at United, they said the best thing about Alex Ferguson wasn't the tactics or anything like that. It was he knew every player in the club. He knew their mother's name. He knew their grandmother's name. And even if you were dropped, he'd make you feel like fucking Hercules. Like yeah. Rooney said in a few interviews, like, if I wasn't playing and I was being rotated or rested or whatever, I'd still feel like I'm doing a big thing for the team because he'd have managed me. Do you know what I mean? But some managers don't do that well, and players can become isolated and fall out of love with the game. And I'd say you can easily fall out of love with the game when you're on the bench.
Just playing football daily because it's all you knew. Yeah. In the flats complex, you grab a football after school, the first thing you want to do is play football. Last thing at night, you'd be getting dragged in. Mm. You still want to play football, you know what I mean?
We handy at the soccer.
I was. I can still kick a ball now.
Did you play for a team?
I played for St. Anthony's as a schoolboy from about 10 to about 15. And we literally won everything. We'd good ballers. One of them up front was Christy Fagan. He ended up going to Manchester United.
Yeah.
And then he ended up back with St. Pat's and Bowles just only a few years ago. Mm. And he retired. He's actually doing a physio now at the moment. And my friend Glenn, who grew up with me in Henrietta Street, me and him, we'd done everything together.
Yeah.
He was on the left side, I was on the right side of front, get those up top. But yeah, we won everything through the schoolboys.
And schoolboys in Dublin is very competitive, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You've got Kevin's boys, St. Joseph's boys, you've got Terry Archer was the big team back in the day.
Some
us.
Good teams. Yeah.
Wefta was another one.
Yeah, and then that team broke up then, and then we split up. Gitta went to Home Farm, and me and Glenn went up to Bowes. And yeah, Bowes was, we had a good squad, but Home Farm was just unbelievable. We bumped into Gitta in the league, and it was just like beating 3-4-0. They were top class boys. Like,
Do you know what we have a problem here, and I'm say it's the same above in Dublin. Do you know, a lot of our talented sports stars, like footballers and boxers and stuff, from 50, they go up as far as 14, 15, and it's just like, it stops because of alcohol and drugs come into their lives, and they lose their motivation and inspiration to go on and get involved in the sport.
Talent is only half the battle. You know, when you have a lot of obstacles in your way.
You need that discipline, don't you?
You do, but you also need a bit of luck.
Yeah.
And like, if you're a talented soccer player and you're from Knocknaheeny, so that's where we're from, and you're a talented soccer player and you're from where Spike lives, you know, with the big houses.
but
as an example, like, you know, you're less likely to be exposed to criminality, to drug use, to trauma and addiction and violence and all that stuff. But when you grow up in a state where you are, you have the talent, you have all these distractions as well. You might be in a home where there's only your mum there and she's trying to look after four kids, or maybe your dad is in prison, or there's mental health issues in the home and stuff like that. So young people from certain areas have a lot more challenges than others.
1,000,000%. And what Timmy said before he finished the sentence, I knew what he was going to say.
Had something in your head. Like.
Absolutely, because I've been there, and I say that nowadays, you know what I mean? And especially through the boxing and through the football. You see it daily, when, you know what I mean? Kids coming through, the best of talent, and then just within them 3 or 4 years, it goes pear-shaped for them. You're like, what happened there, you know what I mean?
Mm.
One guy off the top of my mind, I won't name him. I'll call him the Yank. That's his nickname as a boxer. He'll know. And he's won literally everything. Yeah, he went into like the senior championships at like 17, 18, and he was beating guys 25 and 6. Yeah, and he was just top of the range, travelled all over the world with the Irish squad, boxed the best of Cubans, you name it. And when he went 22, 23, got caught up, went to a 24th party, got caught up on the coke, and one thing led to another. Now he's still team, he's 35, he's still yap all the time, he's tried to get back into it a number of times but couldn't, but like if he'd have stayed on him and his career, he'd be so different, his life would be so different to what it is now. Like,
there was a couple of friends,
unbelievable.
There was a couple of friends of ours from our area, Johnny Kennelly, Stephen Manny's,
good boxers, Spike,
they were probably a fortune back in the day, Spike. But they were very talented, and then they went down a bit of a different, a tough path. They're good now today, thank God, do you know what I mean? But you think like, what could have been, I know Manny boxed for Ireland as well, like, so, you know,
even the soccer, even some fantastic
good
soccer,
soccer players, as well. Yeah. I know.
Like there's one young fella in particular there. Like he was about 13 or 14, going over to some of the big clubs in not just England but also in Scotland. And,
Celtic,
you know, going away and getting stoned the night before you're getting on a plane to go over and go on trials and stuff and. There was a lot of young lads as well who went over and they got homesick, you know. And
came home.
And they were gifted and they just came home and they just kind of lost interest in it because they knew that they couldn't be over there and fulfil what they had, their dreams, you know, because their mammy, the Irish mammy, was back here. You know how that is like. And it's a terrible thing to see, isn't it?
It is. And what James says, sometimes you need that discipline. Like sometimes you see kids that probably aren't as talented as others. But they stay in it, and a couple of years later, they're actually doing very well, or they're doing, and you're like, Jesus, man, that fella was like twice the player he was, or twice the fighter he was, and he didn't make it. But the difference is that little bit of discipline, that little bit of being grounded and staying in the gym and doing your thing, where the other fella, then, like you said, messing around beforehand, thinking, I'll do it next week, the next week, and then before you know it, the years just go by, you know what I mean?
You had obstacles in your way as well, in terms of you started dabbling with the drugs and stuff in your teenage years. What was going on for you around that time and how did that come about?
Yeah, well, I would have started boxing. I would have been brought down to the boxing gym by my father when I was 8 years of age. That was in like 98 or so. And I would have stayed boxing and I would have had an amateur career of probably 80 or 90 fights up until I was 15 or 16. And then I was palling in the flats with the crowd, not wanting to go training. You know, maybe dad would be like, we're training at 6:30. I'd be like, yeah. I'd be showing up the house, he'd be coming around looking for me, I'd be hiding around the block, I'd be hearing him shouting for me, I'd be like, tell him I'm not here to the lads, you know. Knowing I'm not gonna go train, I go back at 9:00, there'd be killings in the house, but you'd still do it, you know what I mean? Yeah. So as time went on, I drifted away from it a little bit. I started wanting to be one of the boys, I'm wanting to be in the flats, I'm wanting to be involved in everything. And it's just part of growing up as well, I suppose, you know what I mean? But yeah, we started messing around the flats, we started drinking, probably smoking a bit of blow. Then one thing led to like sleeping pills. And there was probably 20 in the flats, but there was a group of 4 or 5 that would take a few sleeping pills and a bit of blow and go off and do a bit of robbing and stroking and count the stage where we'd be out. I was like 17, 18, 19, we'd be out from early morning, out and about, just running through the streets.
It's mad what the tablets
and stuff
from the sleeping pills and the relaxers, what they do, you don't give a shit, you don't.
Full of confidence.
You just do anything. Yeah.
When you're that young as well, there's something about that age where you haven't got a worry in the world and you'll do whatever you want to do. You actually don't care about no one. Yeah.
And everybody has the best intentions for you
and
the best advice, but you're like, I understand, I know what I'm doing.
You're still going to do what you want to do, aren't you?
You're taking tablets. You don't realise when that you're so loud when you're on them and you're full of confidence and all. It's only when you're a little bit sober the next day that you realise, geez, that wasn't me. You know what I mean?
Did it cause trouble for you at home then?
Yeah, because James, I would have had a great upbringing.
Yeah.
my dad provided us with everything. My ma was great, you know what I mean? We would have had a great upbringing, but it was just I didn't want to listen, you know what I mean? Now, I had a brother, Clint, who was in addiction. He's still in addiction. He's 43 now. He would have been on hard drugs, and that would have been in the family home, you know what I mean? So it's probably in hindsight that Clint was on it because I knew the consequences then if I ever touched heroin or whatever it be, you know what I mean? Because later on I end up in prison and stuff and you'd see all that around you.
Yeah.
And I never went near that, thankfully, you know what I mean? Because I seen the damages it done to my brother and what was going on in the house, you know what I mean? But probably with him being on drugs, it probably took the eyes off me a little bit, as in the sense I was able to run that little bit freer and wilder, if that makes sense.
You bring up a good point there as well. Like, you don't always have to come from a broken home to end up in addiction. You know, some people like have two solid parents, a stable background, and they don't have the poverty and the mental health and stuff like that. But the child can still end up taking drugs and getting involved in stuff because they spend a lot of the time outside the home, especially when they come into their teenage years, you know, and hanging around the streets. And then when you're exposed to all that, and then it's like peer pressure and stuff.
That's a great point, because sometimes it might be just maybe that child lacks a bit of self-esteem or a bit of confidence, you know, or they just don't seem to fit in to a peer group, and peer group that they do fit into then.
Yeah.
Are the lads, you know, and then in order to fit into that group, you have to take this, you have to do that, you know, to for the boys to respect you. Yeah, and it's a tough period of life, you know. I remember even coming across ecstasy as a young child and what it done for me, the way it made me feel. It definitely helped me to cope with the issues that were going on in my own life back then, you know, and makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense today why somebody would use something to get through that part of a life. Like when we get older, people use prescribed meds to be able to cope with their mental health today. Back then,
there was none of that.
We use stuff like that as well. Like, to get
when young fellas drop out of school, you know, the boredom as well, and the monotony of getting up and not having that to do, the drugs, to kill the time as well.
Yeah.
Well, where was your school?
I was never great in school. I was I would have left secondary school when I was 14 years of age. I remember because we joined the local FOS up on Henrietta Street, and it'd be 15 to join there. And I remember they took me a week or two before my 15th birthday. So I would have fell out of school. I didn't know junior certain school. I would have done one or two subjects. We're in the FOS place I was in. I was doing catering up there. So I was doing the chefing up there. And I was there till I was about 18 or 19. Probably 20. I still have a good relationship with some of the people up there, some of the workers that come and support me in my fights and that nowadays.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was there for a number of years. So school wasn't something for me. And even when I was in school, I was always suspended or sitting outside on my own or from not being involved in the class. And there was a group you actually had one of them on your podcast, Paddy Higgins.
Oh, Paddy. Yeah.
So I listened to Paddy's joke. It was great to hear about him. I play football now and again with his brother. I always ask how he is. So,
nice fella, Andy.
Gentleman.
Great singer as well.
Great on the guitar, isn't he?
Brilliant singer. We got so many requests from people looking to buy his CD, but he doesn't have a CD to sell. But when he gets out, maybe he will. And you know, when he came on the podcast, Christy Moore wrote him a letter and sent it to
Joy. Yeah. You can imagine
the books that would have given him.
Super, lads, isn't it?
Great raspy voice.
Yeah. Because obviously, I listen to his podcast, I listen to a good few of them, and I see Paddy's name, I was like, Paddy. And I listen to it, like, fucking deadly, you know what I mean? But Paddy would have been in my class, and there would have been like out 20, 25, it would have been 4 or 5 of us that'd be all together. And that just got me thinking as well, because there's Paddy. I was in prison. There's me. I'm doing okay now. But I was one of the guys died in a car crash from a robbed car. Yeah. And then the other one or two was doing okay, thankfully. But probably from not putting the head down through school, probably led me to be a bit wild then on the streets then as well. You know what I mean?
You ended up in St. Patrick's.
Yeah. So when I wasn't going boxing, I was out, as I said, running the muck. We were getting involved in crime, robbing, stealing, and we were getting charge sheets. And eventually I ended up in St. Patrick's. I was about 16 or 17. I ended up there twice, one for 4 months, one for 6 months. And then I got my last prison sentence. I ended up in Mountjoy when I was 20.
It was Cork, Celtic or Cork?
When I grew up, it was Hibs and Celtic, but there was two teams in it. It was brilliant. It was outstanding, you know. My brother-in-law of mine, he's down with Buckley. He was bringing me to the games, you know. 1 week you go to the Cross, and the next week you go to, you know, I was a Celtic supporter, so you go to Hibs the following week, hoping they'd lose, like, you know. But but brilliant teams, like, you know. I got a break because just around the corner, like, there was three, there was, like, the famous Maya Denny, was around the corner. Jerry Finnegan was a brilliant player for the, you know, he played with Hibs. And Jerry Miles, he's now a manager of mine, he played with Celtic. You know, he was involved with Celtic when they won the league in 74. Like, I think he would cover the three of them. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, like, I could be going to school and Jerry Finnegan would be on his call. He was a call man, and he'd be striking the ball up and down with his brother. You know what I mean? I'm looking at, you know, you're looking at him in front of maybe 20,000 down the floor, lads.
The Dennehys are a great soccer family too, aren't they? Moya, didn't he get a hat-trick in a FA Cup final?
Was the first time to get a first man to get a hat-trick.
I think his brother then got 9 goals in an AOL game. That was another first.
No, I think it wasn't Moya's brother. It was his first cousins, the Nahis. They'd be more, you know what I mean? But they're steeped in football. All they all play. Grattan, there was 6 or 7 of them on the team, and they played, you know, but all very good players, you know what I mean?
But my dad and my uncles would be big League of Ireland fans, but they tell me stories about Flower Lodge back in the day and thousands at it for finals.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Where was
it? Parky Ring,
it's Parky Ring now.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
And like the crowds would be 20,000 like, a game.
You know, the famous games, the playoff Waterford, and actually great Cal Humphrey scored a goal for, you know, Cockman scored for Waterford that day. Hibs were 2-up. The story goes that the cop directors went out for champagne. There was only 10 minutes left, they were 2-up, and he came back in the Waterford after winning 3-2. You know, Cal, you know, the great Cal Humphrey scored one of the goals for Waterford. But there was 25,000 people at it, you know what I mean? It was, you know.
How did the GAA end up with Parky Ring then? Do you know the story?
I don't, but I do.
Too political.
It's a pity that it was ever lost to. That's another story, you know, James. And
another podcast, maybe.
You don't want to be sold.
We'll move on swiftly. So,
after schoolboys or your youth days, what happened after that? Where did you go?
You'll have to backtrack a bit because at the end of when I was 16, I went off to Bolton, you know, which was real at the time for a fella to go to England, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm just lucky enough to go up, but because I was never coached properly, I was never much older in the area with my friends and things like that. And going to England is obviously a big, huge step. But back then, we hadn't even a phone at home, you know, know what I mean? It's not like now, like...
You didn't have WhatsApp.
So I might as well have been in the middle of Africa. You know what I mean? Because there was no contact. I was 16, never over the ground, and I was over there, and I just swore... I can't be doing this, like, you know.
Yeah.
So I lasted 2 weeks and I came back and I swore I'd never go back to England again. And I actually packed up football then, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
In my head, I was gone. I loved the game. I loved playing the game in local and things like that. But to be, you know, we all did growing up, we wanted to be footballers. But I actually didn't want to be a footballer after that. You
associated being good at football with going to England and you didn't like the idea.
Well, that's what it was, you know. Yeah. You know, like
everybody wanted to do.
Everyone went to go and play in England, you know.
We had Garrod Morrissey here a few weeks ago and very similar experience, went over at 16 and was just very homesick and fell out of love with the game, you know, and came home and, you know, it's not easy for young lads.
To be fair to Garrod, when he came back into the club then, you know, and he done well, he got to move back over.
Yeah.
That shows a lot that a mental strength out of him, you know, that he done that, you know, and at least he gave it a go. And it was brilliant, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, great respect for lads like that, you know? Brian Linehan, I watched the podcast, and he opened up in the podcast, and he said, he was talking about the football career, you mentioned football, and he said, yeah, my failed football career. And, you know, I was saying to myself...
He achieved more than 99% of fellas,
Jesus Christ almighty. How many fellas would love to be in a position, you know what I mean? Like, he was so unfair on himself, you know, great lad, I see him playing, outstanding lad, you know what I mean? And I just felt sorry for him that he thought that way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I hope, wish him well and the rest of it. But, like, he was outstanding, you know what I mean? It was far from a... he done a lot more than I ever did, I tell you, you know what I mean?
And 99% of fellas, you know what I mean?
Like,
his country and playing Premier League.
I just, he was, you know, being behashing himself, I thought, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know...
Sounds like a really tough environment for an Irish lad to go over to England.
Yeah, but it is, because I got the RA stuff and all that was going at the time, you know, in Bolton, 16 years away, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that was part and parcel of, you know, trying to get, you know what I mean, it was dog eat dog. I didn't know that, I was a young fella. you know, the bank of fellas getting at you and things like that. You know, but you, like, as you get older, you'll have to live with these things.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, it's helping a young lad,
you're
never been older.
You're a sensitive teenager, like.
You see, you know what I mean? So, it's later on, didn't it? You know, things like that happen in dressing rooms and things like that, you know. But it's harsh on young lads, like, you know.
Mm. You know? And you know, when you came home and you packed it in for a while?
I didn't pack in football because I loved the game.
Yeah.
Loved the game. I played. Shannonville broke up. I had no job. Club called Central Rovers above in the
Central. Yeah.
Central. Manager called Philly Singleton. He was shop short and say Brooks and Hartons. Half the team were working in Brooks and Hartons.
That's how it works, isn't it?
Yeah. You get your job if you play, like, so, you know what I mean? So, I no club anyway, as such, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, I didn't care, you know what I mean? And I know some of the lads, like, so. And we like, again, it's very successful for junior, you know, we were only young lads, you know? And we famously, I suppose, we won the Irish Cup, was big at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we were kids, you know.
That's the biggest trophy in junior soccer.
It is, really. Back then, it was, you know what I mean? And we had beaten, like, we were only a first division team, but we had beaten, I think, three Premier, top. And one of them was Temple, and it was the greatest kick.
Because they're right next to each other as well,
we drank in the same barrel. Yeah,
You could throw a stone from Central to Temple, like.
Yeah, but, like, no, but Central didn't, Rovers didn't play up there at the time. We played in a place called Glenair, up beyond Blair.
Yeah.
That's where Central Rovers pitch at the time was.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But we all drank in the same barrel.
Yeah.
And they were the superstars, and we were the upstarts. And we beat them one out in the quarterfinal of the Irish Cup. But, like, I remember, like, it's a great story because my own brother, he was hanging around with one of the Temple mentors, Noel Hartnett. And I remember Frankie Tharp, brilliant player. He clattered me anyway, you know, when he was up me. And my brother, get up, you clown. He was... he went to Temple to win, you know. He was over in the airline, you know. I tell you, funny thing. Great, like, yeah. You know. File out over there, but I just, you know, funny things like that. Yeah. Like, get up, you clown, he said. I feel enough, but we beat him anyway. But, like, I told him we had very good players, it turned out to be, you know, that we had good players, you know what I mean. But at the time, we were only kids, and that fizzled out in and Casemiro because I opposite enough, you know, with Casemiro because but one season, didn't I? Went League of Ireland, no man, so.
What was it like moving from junior to...
I don't know. It was... Because I remember he came up to the door and I actually had a flu at the time. Seriously had a flu, like, you know. And he came to the door, patch. Actually, it wasn't Cork City. It was a team called Newcastle West from Limerick. Up in... The first division was just after it started off. So Noel, famous Noel Mahey, he played with Hibs.
Yeah.
And he says... He came to the door anyway, Patsy, really good. And I had no, actually, I was laid off at the time. So this is another thing. No, I'd never played League of Ireland if I had a job, right? That's a fact. So he said, will you play? I said, no, I'm not fit at all. I don't care about that, he says. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And by Christ, did he not care? Run. But up to Newcastle for one season. And like that, no, like the step up was... But all of us was really the fitness.
Yeah.
Once I got fit, it was, you know. So Noel took over Cork City the following season and he brought me in, like, you know, and that's where the talks, you know, I think it was 86. They started off in 84 Cork City. So I think it was 85, 86 or something. Caulfield joined the same year, John Caulfield. And after that, then it was.
The rest is history, as they say.
The rest is history. But,
I missed school. I was in the Nagle at the time, so I was first year. I missed school. I was I don't know, for whatever reason, but I know I wasn't sick. There wasn't, you know, but I just ended up missing the day of school. But there was a match on anyway, and I remember the teacher sent one of the boys down to the door telling me to come up. He goes, look, we don't care about you missing the day, just come up and fall in for the match. I was like, I was there going, but I'm out of school. Like, I said, well, so I ended up going up, play the match. Boys were all going back into school. I was going home because I was out, like, you know. But, that kind of thing. Like, so I suppose there was pressure, like, because I knew why he was calling me up, like, you know, yeah. So I was going up, I knew I had to play well, or so there was pressure, yeah, but, I suppose naturally, there was a kind of, I suppose there'd be a knowing, like, fellas would know, like, oh, look, you kind of have a feeling anyway, you know, you'd, fellas be, like, complimenting you and all the rest of it, like, so you kind of had a feel, look, I must be handy enough, like, you know.
And you guess, are you a marked man? When you're coming up, like, that's Garrow Marsh, you know, midfield. Let's say, I know from when we were schoolboys, there was a fella for Everton, Colin Fielding. He was a striker. And our manager used to say, whatever you fucking do not give him any space, you know? Were you coming up against, like, let's say, now I can imagine if you were playing against Timmy. I said, Garrow Marcy. You fellas are going to be hard, Rania.
100%. It was only ever, though, the North Side clubs are, like... Yeah, that was it. Do you know, like, it was because Mahon and the North Side, like, you had to be harder. Yeah,
there's always that rivalry.
Always, like, so, like, it's like, we, I remember we playing New Farm, and I remember, like, sure, we were only 12s, I'd say, and I remember hearing the manager on the side. I remember I was running down the wing, like, and I remember there was, like, two of the boys behind me kind of chased me, and he was, like, roaring, crack him. I was there. That was my first time really going, jeez, they're proper out to get you.
They're going to kill me.
Yeah,
like, yeah. Don't give me the ball.
Yeah, but, like, then I met fellas growing up, like, and playing in the League of Ireland or whatever, and they'd tell me when they went to Mahon to play the running Mahon, they were, like, got the same kind of, do you know what I mean? Yeah, it's just the way it was. Like,
Mahon were known as a tough club to play against.
And a very hostile place to play as well.
A tough club, like, you were going down there, you were getting a game off of Mahon, you know, you wasn't going down there for an easy game.
Yeah.
It was going to be tough. It was like what they'd call a derby in England, you know?
Yeah.
It was going to be a really physical game.
Yeah.
You know, so...
I think they always, Ring Mahon kind of has, that's just, it's in their makeup, they naturally... The boys in the area, like, just kind of naturally have that. Yeah. Whereas now, like when I was there, whoever was available would manage the team. Do you know? Whereas now, everybody has badges and they naturally have that. But they also have the skill set now to actually coach and develop players. Even I suppose worst case scenario, they're developing players for Ring Man's senior team, you know what I mean? And then best case, they're developing players to move on to England and Cork City and you know.
There's a lot of success coming out of there at the moment.
There is, yeah, yeah.
Players moving on, like.
Yeah, there's a lot of it at the moment. And, do you know, people see it's, like, years ago, no one would have, because it costs money to get your coaches through their badges and all the rest of it. Yeah. Whereas now they'd look at it as a bit of an investment, like they're going, right, we're going to develop the players then eventually move on, you know, and it's it goes full circle, you know, it pays dividends, like, you know, they end up getting compensation packages from the English clubs and, you know, all the rest of it, like.
I remember when we were playing schoolboys with New Farm, around the team that was the best around at the time, I think it was Cove, Stephen Orland was playing for him at the time, and you could see he was head and shoulders above everybody else, you know. Have you ever had that experience in school-wise? Who was the best teams that you were coming up against? And who's maybe the best players? Or did anybody really stand out to you?
Yeah, there would have been a few, yeah. Do you know what? It was a weird one. I remember there was a fella there with Buttervint. It was. And it was random enough, like, you know. But I was one of these fellas. I never, ever stood back and assessed the situation. Or, like, stood back and, like... Oh, he's supposed to be this, and he's supposed to be a good player. I never cared about any of that. Like, I suppose my dad always, like, whatever it was, could be going out to school in the morning, like, whatever, he'd be going to get stuck in. So, like, I always had that mentality, like, of just going to get stuck in. And, like, my dad would always be saying, when I, as that high up, like, whatever, like, he's only two, you know, arms and legs the same as you, like, whatever you're doing, like, you know.
The minute you give him credit, do you know, the minute you give them the awe, like, you lose that kind of...
You do, yeah. You and, like, you almost, you put him on a bit of a pedestal or something. You give him an edge before you even get into it with him, and then all of a sudden you're in it with him and you're going, hang on a minute, like I'm holding my own here, like, you know, there's nothing special, you know. So I always had that. But back to it, there was a fella in Buttervint, actually don't know his name, we ended up at the end of the team holiday a couple of years ago, and I actually bumped into him out there, and like two of us were going out just chatting about it, like, and I was like, how random it was. Like, he was like, you don't even know me now, do you? I was like, I actually wouldn't believe it now, but I would actually know you and your brother. Like, I was like, two yeast stuck out in my head through the whole school boys playing or whatever, like, you know. So yeah, so that was a random enough one, like, but there was obvious players, you know, around, you hear the odd fella here, there, he's good, whatever, like, you know. And then you go on to trials with for the Kennedy Cup team and all that, and you get an eye for a few fellas, you're saying, oh, like, he's with him, he's with them, he's with them. So you know, you'd know, like.
Do you know when you're at the Kennedy Cup? Actually, for people that don't know, would you explain the Kennedy Cup?
Yeah, well, yeah, so like it's you know, it was the be all and end all when we were growing up. Like, I remember everybody saying to me, oh, Kennedy Cup year next year, no, Kennedy Cup year next year, and I was like, do you know, so straight away I was building up, like, I was going, fuck, Kennedy Cup must be serious, like. But do you know, it's a huge tournament, the best players, you know, generally, like, I know one or two might not get picked for whatever reason, or they might slip through the net, like, so generally the best players are there. Like, I know one or two, maybe you always think, oh, he should have been there, and probably should have too, but
players develop later.
Yeah, do you know, I've seen that tenfold. I done a Zoom call earlier today, and I was telling him, like, he was like, well, I would just say it to young fellas, like, I was like, just stick at it, whatever it is. I goes, no matter what it is, I goes, as long as you're, you know, as long as you're at it, you're sticking at it, stick with it. Because I know players who I would have never said they're going to earn a living out of this. Like, I would have never said it. And, like, could be whatever, 5-6 years later, I see them, they're still at it, and they're earning a living. They're actually after becoming really good players. Whereas in me, as a young fella, like, I'd be like, oh, no, he's not really good. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. But the fact they have the resilience by and the perseverance just to keep going with it and keep at it, that's half it, like, you know what I mean?
And I think there's a certain risk as well, you know, when young players get into the Kennedy Cup, which is around 14, isn't it?
Yeah, 30, it's 14 now, it was 13.
And even in this day and age, no, they're playing League of Ireland on the 13s and the 15s, there's an element of, I've made it, you know? Yeah. And then for the young fellas that don't get picked for Cork City and Shamrock
Rovers, at
that
age,
there's an element of, oh, I'm no good, I'm going to try something else, you know. But there's so much more time to develop.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
And I've seen it myself, because I followed my nephews with playing with Cork City underage and Corinthians and Cove Ramblers and stuff like that. But I've seen fellas come and playing with them that were lesser players than them, but are probably doing better today.
Yeah.
And fellas that were better players than them, but are doing worse today. Yeah, do you know what I mean? So it's very hard to manage, isn't it?
It is.
If you look at Roy Keane didn't go off to England when he was 18, 19.
Yeah.
He just didn't give up, as you said there. He probably wasn't picked for some stuff there, like Kennedy Cup teams back then or whatever it may have been.
Yeah, 100%.
But he kept going. He knew his dream was that he wanted to be a professional footballer. Yeah. Kept going, kept training after training, do you know, all 100%. These different things.
Yeah.
And he went on to be probably one of the best players that we ever produced.
He's
in this
probably
country.
That's the prime example of it, like, you know? Isn't it? Like, it's just fella just sticking at it. And like, you talk to him, I know Roy was brilliant, like, in the, you know, the Premier League and that when you're watching him, but like, you talk to a lot of fellas and they'd be saying, oh, sure. And even like, probably his brother's supposed to be better, all these kind of things, you know, like, so he wasn't unbelievable, like, but he just perfected it, like, he stuck at it, and he just like you said, but he just kept going and got there, like.
I personally loved his determination, you know,
just,
and his energy around the team as a leader, because I would have visualised myself as being something similar, no, not as good as a player, but a leader.
You had that
just,
mindset, like.
But I just loved, you know, for the team to win.
Yeah.
Do you know, just take the passion of it about the football. It wasn't about anything else. It was about just winning and you know, just being there for the rest of the players and pushing them on and instead of throwing them, not all the time, but throwing them a few fucks here and there because they're giving them a bit of confidence.
Yeah.
You know, it's very important for even the coaches coaching young players today. Watch what they're saying to the players on the fields. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because if they start shouting and effing and roaring at them, the confidence is just gone.
Yeah.
It's gone. And I know this now from my own experience, but if they say, listen, Marvor, give them a chance. Yeah. Listen, you're doing well. Listen,
yeah.
Just get it up, step it up a little bit more. Just put a little bit more energy. if you're not able today, just let me know. We'll put on somebody else, you know?
Yeah.
Things like that. Instead of, what the?
Yeah.
Do you know all this kind of shit? It really destroys players.
That's something I noticed out in Corinthians when my nephews are from Halley Hill, but they played schoolboys with Corinthians, which is in Douglas, obviously. But something I noticed straight away when they went out there was there's no screaming at the children. And it was all encouragement and play out from the back. And if you make a mistake, that's okay. You know, that type of thing, like what Timmy is saying.
That's an old school thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Just roaring at them. And, do you know, like, I can't Ferguson with the hairdryer treatment type thing. Like, that's different. Like, fellas then on the line down the school by team took that as the way to do it. Like, but
with children.
He's dealing with grown fully developed men and they're, you know, they're professional and, you know,
and they're on 100,000
like,
a week.
But that's I totally agree with that. I think it's like you've a huge responsibility when you're coaching, like, you know, and you're not just developing the player, like, it's people you're developing, like, so you have them for so many hours a week. Whatever if you're the manager, you've them for so many hours. Like, the good you can do, you can impact their lives for that few hours a week, you know what I mean? And you can help bring them on a level, like, and just in terms of people, you know what I mean? And then the football, if you're developing players too, sure, like, that's great then, you know what I mean?
Do you ever read the book The Secret?
Yeah.
It's not about the universe, like, and they swear and they'll people willing you to win, like, do you know?
The law of attraction,
I feel like that as well. I think there's a lot of love and support for me, and I genuinely feel that, and I believe it, and I think it's going to help me to achieve my goal, like, do you know?
Definitely.
So, you know, I kind of, more so than for myself, really, what I kind of dream about, really, is... my kids, like, I like my kids to be able to say, like, you know, I always thought that's always something that really truly inspired me. It was like the, you know, I used to get the bus up and down Dublin for years and the trains and whatnot, and I used to meet loads of women on the train and be chatting to them or whatever, like, you know, and they'd all be saying, like, you know, I was kind of coming around to saying, well, my dad was shoemaker, my dad used to be a podcast fella, whatever, you know what I mean? And right, like, for my kids when they're on the train journey or on the bus, like, in years to come, say, well, my dad was champion of the world, like, you know, so. It's something nice I'd love from be able to say, like, you know.
That's unbelievable. Like.
Yeah.
And looking at you, look so young.
I know, yeah.
So young, like, for what? What are you?
I'm 36. 36, I tell you that, like, to be sponsorship, be free, and there's no specs ever.
This podcast is brought to you by Specs Savers.
Somebody asked me there during the week, I won't mention who it is in case they don't want me to. This is... what do you put on your face? And I says, I could put on a day and night cream from the body shop, you know? If we were home, my wife is next to me when I was been asked the question on social media, and I just, like, I'm the kind of fella, I'd say, oh, yeah, just, the two of us were sitting in the kitchen in stitches, you know what I mean? Just because somebody noticed the glow on my face because of the cream, you know? But it'd be nice now for the body shop to give to start giving it for nothing, but...
You look healthy, like, for 60 years of age, like.
do you know what? I feel probably better now, and I'm 40, than I possibly ever did in my life. Because, number one, I would have never known how I felt because I had no awareness about life. But, you know, being away from all these chemicals and alcohol and even my mental health... And I'm not as stressed as I would have been before, constantly in the fight or flight mode. I just feel nice and relaxed and calm, you know, and I still have to deal with my daily kind of bits and pieces, you know, some stuff comes up for me and I still have to deal with it. But you know what, in general, I really, really have a good life. And it's not because I have loads of money or anything like that, it's because I really... feel good in myself, you know, and I got a lot of gratitude for things. At the moment, I'm just starting my own business. I was at one stage, and I wasn't. I was going with a construction firm. Now I'm back doing it again, you know. And people have been very, very good to me of late, you know, and helping me out. You know, there's like James there from McCarthy Insurance, like he helped me out with construction insurance, McCarthy Insurance looked after me, and just other people, like, have just phoned me up and saying to me, like, we've a job here, you might be interested in doing that, you know, and I want to start employing people like ourselves, like me and James are coming from...
It's the law of attraction, you know, what Mike was on about, like, because you're so well in yourself, you're attracting all, people want to help you because they say, no, wait, Timmy's doing something good there for the community, Timmy's a good guy, we're going to help him out, Spike comes across really well, he's a family man, he engages with his fans, he's grounded, I wish him the best of luck, you know, it's like, people don't like fucking arrogant people,
That's what it's about, which is about Spike's just about listening for years, we were fucking... a nuisance to our community. We were causing trouble or causing criminality or getting stoned around the place. But now we're trying to do what we can for anybody that needs it and asks for a bit of help in any way we can, you know.
Of course, yeah.
And you're both looking very well as well, like, you know, I must say that now, you know.
Me a small bit better.
That's for me, yeah.
I'm actually back lifting weights for the last few weeks, so I'm trying to plan.
Yeah, you look strong, you still lose the belly.
it's actually so hard to lose the belly. It's fucking stubborn. No, if you're dedicated, I find it down my trunk.
Do you know the key is, right, when you are like that, you're on the healthy living buzz and whatever, and you're saying, why isn't the belly? When you start thinking like that, just ignore it, keep going. Shortly after that, the belly starts to shrink.
Do you know when I get near the goal, I abandon it?
Yeah. But the key is to keep going. Do you know, it's a pattern that you probably have
I'll
in
just
your life.
Make the slip doesn't have to be a catastrophic slip. It can be a day and then get back on the saddle.
Exactly.
What way is your diet?
Yeah, fairly good there. I'm actually with a crew called Gymtrician there in Dublin. They give me all my meals, like, but they have them for... last good few fights, you know, top notch food, like, very, very good, like, you know, so that helps a lot.
Do you know when you're doing a lot of training, are you consuming a lot of calories?
I kind of have to cut down, like, to be honest, because it's making weight, like.
Yeah, is that a hard aspect to your career?
It is.
You cook your own food now, Spike, don't you?
I do all the time. My mom was cooking, I was cooking there, and I got a lovely steak and onions and mushrooms, poppies.
That's the job.
You know, treating myself with no cheat meal, kind of from the Gymtrician one.
I'd ham. Yeah, I was off meat for about 3 years.
Why?
And I'm only recently on it for the last 4 weeks. I'd say James, and my wife made a boiled dinner today.
Nice.
Cabbage and turnip. For anyone that's listening abroad, remember the old turnip and cabbage
lovely.
And the ham. It's
hard to beat.
I missed all that.
Yeah, you would. Know?
But since I started eating meat again, I'm after losing the weight.
Yeah, interesting.
Because there's more protein. You see, I was
less carbs.
Less carbs.
I was eating all these vegetarian foods, vegetarian sausages, burgers, and different things like that. There was a lot of carbs in them, but I was eating them because I thought, should I not eat this? No, I'll eat this. But there was no protein in them, just a load of carbs. But now I'm back and eating meat. But I'm not overdoing it either, you know. I'm still eating very, very healthy. And then doing a bit of exercise.
Hey, you look at it.
Yeah, so we're all healthy today.
Yeah. But just to bring it back to your boxing, can I ask you about your power? You've probably the hardest punch I've seen. You know, it's... like, are you completely confident that, you know, going in against... I suppose if I had that right hand, I'd be very confident that no matter who I'm fighting, I can end the fight at any moment. Do you always...
I guess I can, I can do it, actually. In fact, I'm right-handed, but I've ended more fights in my left hand. I punch a boat very hard. A very hard punch, right, like, which is just a very good thing. And my coach always said to me, like, you could be 11 rounds down. You could have lost, be appointed for the 11 rounds, but you might knock him out in 12. Mm. With the kind of power you have, you always have a chance.
And is that a natural power you have?
I was born with it, but obviously I developed it, and I've been training hard all my life and eating fairly well. I suppose, like, that enhances the power.
You improve it as well, don't you?
Yeah, improve technique as well, and practice over the years. And actually, I think the whole of 2020, I got a punch bag. It took a couple of months for it to arrive, actually, with the whole... bloody COVID situation, but I had no punch bag for a while. But maybe that was a blessing in disguise too. I had two bursts of eardrums actually in my last fight, so it took me a while to recover from that. And I enjoyed the break. You know, it was great. I tell you, 2020 was probably the best year of my life, even though I'd only done one fight. I loved it. I never got to spend so much time all my life with my kids. My missus now works
4 days a week in the chemist, like, but I was home every day with the kids, like, I loved it.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Like, I was there.
You get to know them too, wouldn't you?
Oh yeah, I'd be very close to them, like, but yeah. You know, just the whole time we were baking and we had lots of fun, like.
Yeah.
You know,
that sounds beautiful.
I know. Twice, yeah. No, it's great. I've no kids, right? But I've two dogs, and
two man dogs.
If we went back to normal in the morning, my dogs wouldn't know what to do, like, because they're so used to us being at home, you know.
Yeah.
And for them to go back out the back 9 to 5, like, Jesus Christ! But there's good aspects to being at home, and there's positive aspects to the lockdown. But then the negative, obviously, is the gyms, especially, you know, not having that outlet. But you do, because you're an elite athlete.
We're an elite athlete, so I can go to Dublin, like, train my boxing gym, like, Pascal's gym.
When you're training for a fight, do you stay in Dublin too?
I do, yeah.
Up in Pascal's gaff?
No, I stay in a hotel.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
There's some hotels open for business.
Oh, there's loads of them. Yeah. I stayed in City West there for about 8-9 years. I'm friends with a lot of staff there, like, but they're actually closed down now, kind of, as such, because the COVID, the government took them over for the COVID. So I'm staying out in the Carlton Hotel there now in Lansdowne. It's great. They're very nice there as well, and they're leaving me open. They open the gym privately for me, the whole gym to myself. And
that's fantastic.
Yeah, the for the general public's not open or whatever, but they gave me, they said I could because of the fight, like.
That's the job.
Up, yeah, it's great because I need to train 2 or 3 times a day, like.
Do you know, if you were a magic wand and you had three fights left, who would your three opponents be?
Jeez, well, whoever's world champion at light middleweight anyway. I'd like a rematch with Lemieux as well before I retire. I believe that I'd beat him, you know. I'm not going to go so far as to say it was a fluke punch, like, it kind of was, but, like, he's been throwing those great punches for years, and, I mean, he threw it, he landed it, he kind of wasn't even looking, actually, if you see the shot, like, he was kind of looking this way, and I hit him, but I'd like to fight him again. I think I'd beat him, like, for example, McGregor's last fight, he fought that guy,
Poirier,
he beat him convincingly in the first fight, pretty quickly. You know, but he got beaten in the rematch, and I believe it'd be the same between me and Lemieux. And I was actually thinking about that whole scenario whilst Poirier was preparing for the McGregor fight. I was thinking, like, what's in his head now? Like, you know, how's he feeling about it over what happened in the first fight? And I thought to myself, like, I'd be delighted to fight Lemieux again. I'd have no question, no qualms about it. Like, I believe I'd beat him. Yeah. And I think I'd actually destroy him.
Yeah, I think you would too. Yeah,
What's the possibility of a fight like that?
I'm going to concentrate first. Like, I want to become, first and foremost, I want to become world champion. So my weight division now is like middleweight. Like, Lemieux has gone up to super middleweight. He struggles to even make that, but I'd go up the weights, but, like, to meet him again. Just lift a bit more weights and just be that weight, like, rather than the time I fought him. I had the longest training camp in my career, about 13 weeks, and I was walking around on weight at middleweight, but I'm too small for middleweight anyway, really. But I'd done a bit too much cardio, and I was bang on middleweight, like. So I was walking around, literally. When I weighed in, I actually, getting into the ring that night, I was 161 pounds, which is only a pound over the weight division, like. Lemieux was 179 pounds, 18 pounds heavier than me in the night, like.
You're at a disadvantage straight away when you're going up a weight, like.
Yeah, sure, Roy Jones is doing the commentary on the fight. He said, it's a cruiserweight against a middleweight, like. He was, like, 3 weight divisions above me, like, in the ring.
Yeah.
You know.
Who's the elite at your weight class at the moment?
One of the Charlo brothers, or twins there from New York. I think I heard he's going moving up to middleweight soon, so I'm not sure, like.
Yeah. That's who you'd have your eye on. Would you have to have, do you need to pick up 1 or 2 wins in the meantime to put yourself back in contention?
I do, yeah, and I will.
Yeah.
When's have you anything lined up?
Yeah, end of April, I think I'm going to have a fight in Unks soon, you know. That's what we're kind of talking about at the moment. You know, I'm going to Belgium there for on the 20th of March, and I think I'm going to return there to the same place and fight myself at the end of April, as far as I know, like.
Yeah.
But it hasn't been announced yet, and I think that's where my coach is negotiating at the moment. Like.
They don't give him much time between announcing it and the fight actually happening.
Yeah, but I've been in training camp there the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I'm helping Craig O'Brien. I'm sparring with Craig. He's fighting on the 20th of March, so I'm sparring him for his preparation. And when he's finished his fight, providing all goes well for him, he's going to come back and help me.
Yeah.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.